Are you tired of working with generic IT providers that rely on you to be the expert? Arc IT goes beyond just fixing your tech headaches. They specialize in proactive IT management, BIM support, and data security for your architecture firm. The team at Arc IT gets your tech so you can focus on doing your best work. Whether you're a small firm of 10 or a growing practice with 50 or more employees, unleash the full potential of your creative vision with Arc IT. Visit getarcit.com and schedule your free IT assessment today. This episode of Entree Architect Podcast is supported by our generous sponsors, BetterHelp and Arcat.com. My name is Mark R. LePage, and you are listening to Entree Architect Podcast, where each week I speak with inspiring, passionate people who share their knowledge and expertise, all to help you build a better business as a small firm entrepreneur architect. Daniel Levy, welcome to Entree Architect Podcast.
Thanks, Mark. It's great to be here.
It's good to have you here, Daniel. Daniel is an architect and co-founder of DK Levy Architecture and Design, along with his wife, Kendall. DK Levy has worked on over 250 projects spanning three countries, focusing on designing exceptional experiences in entertainment, senior living, multifamily living, religious and working spaces. Daniel sits on a variety of boards and also works closely with the University of Tennessee, creating opportunities and experiences for design students through internships and practical hands-on work. Been published, has lots of awards, is doing a great job and doing some great work at DK Levy. And what I want to talk about today, Daniel, is how you do that. What are some of the core values, core business principles, the approach that you take with your firm to be able to design the work that you do and to be able to have the client satisfaction that you do? So that's what I'd love to chat about. But before we do that, I want to know more about you. I want to know when you discovered your passion for architecture and maybe even who or what inspired you to get started in this profession.
Thanks, Mark. Yeah, so I mean, I think like a lot of architects, you know, it starts out with a passion and a love for drawing and seeing things built and the whole construction process. And so at a pretty young age, I knew I either wanted to be a doctor or an architect. And definitely made the right choice because I would not have made a good doctor. The rest of my family is kind of in that field and it's much too detailed and repetitive. So I really like the challenge that we face as architects. You know, no day is the same, either in the office or just with the variety of projects and challenges we face. So yeah, I really took on drawing and had some classes and drafting classes in high school, and that led into getting into the University of Architecture program at the University of Tennessee. So really early on, a lot of the came from my dad had a small business and I had a lot of kind of business principles and ideas, you know, really from a very young age. I had my first business at age 10. And so it was really kind of business minded. But, you know, as it relates to architecture and just the standard process that, you know, you've got to go to school for 5 years, then you've got the, you know, the 3 to 5 year internships, and then obviously the exams and licensure. I was on a fast track, get licensed as quick as I could throughout school and my internships there, gaining credit, and then I knew I wanted to start my own firm as soon as possible. But a lot of people think my middle name starts with a K, but you know, that's K is for Kendall, and we married. She's an interior designer, and we started our firm when I was about 13 years ago. Yeah, so. And we started together. Now we've got 5 kids, so she's focused on that. And I get the business. And I'm not sure who has the harder job, her or me. But.
Oh, I can tell you who has the harder job. So you mentioned your dad was an entrepreneur. Yeah, and you said that there's medicine in the family. So what did your dad do?
Yeah, he runs it's a pretty niche business. And it's in the healthcare field. It's calibration and repair of physical therapy equipment. So it's a very niche service business. Again, like architecture, though, and the similarities it has, it deals with client relationships, doing things with integrity, you know, doing what you say you're going to do and maintaining longstanding relationships. And that's really some of the guiding principles that I've kept really at the heart as you peel back the layers of our core values and what keeps us going is relationships that we have with our clients and then the relationship our buildings have with the users.
Going back to when you were a child and your dad running his own business, were you aware of what was happening and sort of how the business was being run? And did you sort of pick that up along the way?
Yeah, I think principles of it for sure. I mean, we got to see his studio, his office was out of his house, and I run my studio. We're a small firm. There's myself included, there's only six of us. And so we've kind of emulated that. We have a 15-acre property and we've got our studio on property and my house is on property. And so there's a lot of overlap between family and work, and creating healthy boundaries there, but also, you know, integrating a lot of different things together. So I had that growing up. My dad actually had a music studio first. He was a recording and engineer, and we had that in our basement growing up. We had to be real quiet as kids. We had different artists in the basement, but then as he transitioned into the more healthcare business, we certainly had our hand in that. I remember folding sales brochures and, you know, doing mailers and going out on sites with him to do sales calls and repair calls. Definitely was involved.
Yeah. So entrepreneurism is in your blood. You were raised around it. You said your first business was when you were 10. What was your first business? What did you do?
Yeah, not related to architecture at all. I think part of, you know, being an entrepreneur, you just see opportunities and you just kind of jump at it. And
yeah,
there was a wrapping paper company that was nearby. And I was like, I'm going to go buy it from the factory. You know, it was like 50 cents a roll, and then go door to door in my neighborhood selling it to these moms. They're paying $10 a roll, you know. So,
yeah, that's good margin.
Yeah. Probably should still stuck with that. So
yeah, I know. I mean, it's funny you say that. I have some early businesses in my background as well. And I think about that all the time. Some of those businesses were by far the most profitable things I've ever done, for sure.
Yeah. Selling popcorn is a good margin too, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And so when you're struggling with trying to make ends meet as an architect early on, it's like, should have stuck with detailing hot rods.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah. It's like, you know, it's a different world for sure. But all those lessons help you build the business that you have today and the values that you have today. And certainly it sounds like having that in your background sort of helped you make some decisions early on. When you first launched the firm with your wife, Kendall, did you sort of build out that plan and sort of understand the values, or was that more of an evolution over time?
Yeah, I think they were just always instilled. And, you know, the first couple of years, we didn't have, you know, core values written out or out on our website. These were just the things that, you know, when we started, when we actually sat down and wrote out our core values and mission statements, it was obvious that a lot of these things were the backbone of the company that we were just doing intuitively. Mm-hmm. So it kind of made it easier in a way. It just became, this is who we are and how we, you know, hire team members and how we treat our clients and, you know, what our missions are.
When along the line did you recognize that core values were something that you wanted to sort of focus on in your business? And, you know, you say that they were instilled in what you were doing and it's sort of who you are and who Kendall is and sort of comes from your background. Also, you have your office on your property. And so obviously your family is integrated into that as well. So that's probably part of it. But did you from the beginning say, okay, we're going to establish, you know, a formal list of core values? Or was it more, you know, this is how we're going to do it. And along the way, you just sort of documented them.
Yeah, I think for core values, in hindsight, I wish we had been more diligent about writing them down. And we would talk about them. We would highlight them in an interview process. And because we didn't have them officially written down, the message may have changed slightly, but intuitively they were there. Like core value, like integrity, we would talk about it. And it was always critical, but again, it wasn't facing, it wasn't written down, it wasn't on our website, it wasn't client facing, it wasn't team facing until we really started hiring, you know, 2, 3, 4 people. So that, you know, when we were at that growth phase, now when we would talk to clients about it, we'd explain as architects, you don't want to be a commodity. It's like everyone does good design, you know, so what sets you apart? And for us, it's really our core values. And as we're looking to differentiate ourselves first to our team, you know, it's internal focus first, which is treating our people well, treating each other well, valuing each other. And then, because if we can't do it internally at our core, then we're not going to be able to do that to our clients. So like when I talk to people and clients and they're trying to figure out who we are and what we do, it's really the relationship we have in our core team and how we relate to each other, how we communicate with each other, how we challenge each other, and how we work together and row together. And that's really what they're getting, this team, when they come to a project with us. And the way we treat each other, they're going to be treated. And I think for us, that's why relationship kind of comes to the top of one of those core values is important. Because even when we were getting started, Mark, it was not just like, okay, let's go hang up a shingle and then hope the phone rings, you know, which I remember sitting at a restaurant when we knew we were getting started. And I'm like phasing out of my old job, sitting there with Kendall. And I'm like, what if the phone doesn't ring? But even the relationship of the company that I was working for, which was a developer and I was their in-house architect, you know, it was critical for that relationship to end well. And yeah, they ultimately became some of our first clients and generated a lot of leads for us. And so it was important, and it's always been important from the beginning, that we valued the relationships that we had in building the company. And that's how a lot of our business grew, word of mouth.
So I heard you say integrity is one of your values. Treating your team well is another. Relationship is another. What are the rest of your core values for the firm?
Yeah, so we have ownership. When we think about ownership, it could go a couple of different ways, but really for us, we want to think, like for our clients, like we think we are passionate about our work, and we think of every project as if it's our own. Mm-hmm. And then also in every project, there's opportunities basically where we've got to own up to something. Maybe there's a gap in the drawings or there's an issue, and we really work as a team. And so a lot of times, you know, an architect will think, oh, my responsibility is to get the drawings done, and then it's on to the next project. But most stressful time for a client is really in construction. There's a lot of cost. Quick decisions need to be made. There's a lot of opportunities there. When there is an issue, that ties into the integrity thing, it's like, what are we going to do when there's a challenge, you know, and how are we going to come to the table? So it affects relationship, it affects integrity. Sometimes our faith core value is in there because we really have to remember who we're doing this for. We're steering this business for the Lord. And so it's not just about one thing. And so, yeah, for us, they all kind of interplay together. And then we have innovation. And then that's just, you know, we're a young, energetic, lean team, and we're always pushing the boundaries with technology, the resources that we can use, and how we solve problems.
Yeah, I can imagine that all of them work together to sort of establish who you are and how you approach what you do. I heard the word opportunities when you're talking about when things don't go right, mm-hmm. right? That potentially other firms might call problems or issues or crises. You see them as opportunities. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah. We get opportunities quite a bit. I mean, it could be anything from, for example, yesterday we had a client call and he was so mad because one of our team members sent an email saying, hey, we need a structural engineer on this project. And he blew up because he's like, I hired DK Levy and you gave me a fee and now the price is going up. So why didn't you realize we need a structural? And it was an opportunity for us in that lack of communication to make it right. And so
yeah,
when someone's yelling at you, you can be very defensive and, you know, return fire, things like that. But those for us are our opportunities to really be a peacemaker and really dive into that relationship. And I think, you know, after that whole conversation was diffused, you know, I think we've got a client for life, you know, because they see that we really care about what they were experiencing when they got that email and how it wasn't handled right from our end. And then the opportunity was that we had the opportunity to make it right and really take the time, took an hour of my day yesterday to call him and work through it. And we did. And so those are, again, he really appreciated me taking the hour and talking to him and understanding how he felt in that situation. And so that's a small opportunity. Another opportunity would, you know, which are the harder ones, is when things get really expensive, when things go wrong. And they do, you know, in our field, they can get expensive fast. And so, again, it's treating people the way you'd want to be treated and working through it. And you got to kind of take off the architect hat, put on the mediator hat. And, you know, usually we can work things out, I guess. Like I said, so I think it's important as an architect and as a firm owner to not just, you know, be the jump starter or just the guy that is a great designer, but you also have to be able to be a peacemaker and mediator at times.
Yeah, which comes back to relationships. And with your call with your client yesterday, ownership, right? That you've took ownership of that problem rather than being defensive and trying to find ways to sort of hide from the error. You owned it and you spent time with them and said, here's what happened. Here's why it happened. Here's why it won't happen again. Mm-hmm. Right. And that's very effective with an angry client. Let's take a quick break to say thank you to our sponsors for their support of this episode. Architects, listen up. Is something interfering with your happiness or preventing you from achieving your goals? Regardless if you have a clinical mental health issue like depression or anxiety, or if you're just a human who lives in this world and is going through a hard time, therapy can give you the tools to approach your life in a very different way. I know this community of small firm architects very well, and I see many of you struggling. That's why I reached out to this episode's sponsor, BetterHelp. BetterHelp is a platform that makes finding a therapist easier because it's online, it's remote. And by filling out just a few questions, BetterHelp can match you with a professional therapist in as little as a few days. It's easy to sign up and get matched with a therapist. There's a link in the show notes. It's betterhelp.com/architect. Just use that link, betterhelp.com/architect. Clicking that link helps support this podcast, but it also gets you 10% off your first month of BetterHelp. So you can connect with a therapist and see if it helps you. If you need someone to talk to, consider online therapy with BetterHelp. Click the link in the show notes or visit betterhelp.com/architect. That's betterhelp.com/architect. Thank you to BetterHelp for supporting this podcast and for supporting our community of small firm architects. For over 30 years, RCAT has been providing AEC professionals with high quality and up-to-date building product information. Today, RCAT.com is much more than a product catalog, with BIM, CAD, and specifications created in collaboration with manufacturers. Beyond that, RCAT.com also offers lead data, continuing education resources, newsletters featuring the latest projects and products, and don't forget, detailed podcasts. RCAT.com is truly the one-stop shop for everything architecture. Try it out. Go to RCAT.com. That's ARCAT.com. So I'm also hearing relationships, that a lot of this sort of comes back to relationship, especially with a client like that. Some of that diffusion that you went through yesterday with your customer and your client probably also was successful because of the relationship that you had with them prior to that issue, right? That you've built up some credibility and some positive points, essentially, with your customers before that happens. So when you do have an issue, you have something in the bank. Is that sort of true?
In that particular instance, the 1 hour I spent with the client was the first interaction I personally had, because our team, with that ownership core value, each project manager and really every team member, even if we're bringing someone right out of college, we're growing them into be able to run their own projects and manage their own client relationships. And so our team had been managing that particular client relationship, and this was the first time I had talked to him. And so it was really an opportunity for me as the firm owner to explain some of our core values. I also had explained to him that, you know, for us, like getting back to kind of our team and our internal team relationships being key, it was important for me to explain to him that it's not acceptable for him to talk to our team that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Even though he's upset. And that's part of the buy-in that our team needs to know, is that we are going to have mutual respect for each other. We want a long-standing relationship, but we can't treat each other that way. And I actually offered him a refund on all the services you paid us today, give you the drawings, and happy to introduce you to another architect. But if this is going to be the way he's going to treat our team, it's not an acceptable way. But at the same time, we spent other bits of time trying to work through it, and we did. And like I said, I think that's important. Now, with other relationships and cultivating long-standing relationships, a lot of our clients have been with us from the very beginning. There is a foundation there of trust, and that's really important as we have grown our business. You know, early on, we were saying yes. You know, you're growing a business, you say yes to every project and every client that comes with a project. But now we've gotten a little bit more selective. If there's a project or maybe even a client that doesn't fit our sweet spot, you know, we try and guide them into a better place if we're not a fit.
How does your core values help you find those ideal clients? Is that part of your marketing strategy as well, to weed out the clients that you're not interested in as well as attract the clients that you are interested in?
Yeah. So I think the first thing it does for us is it helps us establish our team. And so our internal team, which is the most critical part of our firm, and really our most value that we bring to market, is our people. And so our core value first helps us build our internal team. And then, yes, it allows us to say yes or no to a project if there isn't alignment. So an example of that, we had a client come to us that we do multifamily projects for, which is really our sweet spot. You know, we do a lot of multifamily projects, but they had a particular project that was going against our faith core value with a type of restaurant that was not in line with what we did. It wasn't like a bar. It was more of a gentleman's club kind of environment. And so for us, we had a decision to make, you know, like we could have this relationship severed because, you know, we don't take on the project. But instead of calling and being like, you know, we just can't take on this project because we don't feel right about it, we could reference our core values in that scenario and say, due to our faith core value and these reasons that are, you know, it's clearly listed on our website, and this is why we can't take on this project. And it makes explaining that a lot easier versus if you didn't have core values client facing, if there was a limiting factor there, then you would kind of just be left on your own as far as explaining that.
Do you also feel that working with your existing clients into the future, you have them referring to your core values when they refer you to potential other clients?
I think the way they would describe our approach, and I've seen it as they do, you know, email introductions and things like that, like, here, let me introduce you to Daniel and his team. This is the things we like about them. They're using words and descriptors that are part of our core values, but they're not saying, you know, exactly faith, or they're not exactly integrity or exactly relationship. But when it's not just work with Daniel because you're just another project in the hop, they're a big firm, so that, you know, you might get some expertise, but, you know, you're just a number. So that's not the kind of stuff we see. We see, no, they care about your project. You'll get attention. You're going to have an experienced person on your project dedicated the whole time. It's not going to be fed off to a bunch of interns. So there's a lot of things that we see that our clients value that align with our core values.
Can you describe the type of work that you do and the type of firm that you have so we can sort of understand how this sort of fits into the rest of the projects you do?
Yeah. So a lot of our clients and the work we end up doing are places where people live and work, and primarily residential, being the multifamily, senior living, and single family, townhome, condo type projects. That would be probably 80% of our business. And then the rest of our projects are either give back projects, which are overseas projects primarily. And then we have some churches and miscellaneous commercial or other projects that come from, you know, clients that we've been working with for years.
And describe the firm. How many people you had mentioned? Was it six, including you?
Yeah.
So one of the things that often makes an architecture firm successful is the brand, right? That you can differentiate yourself from other firms, and the brand story, right? That the story of your firm and how people describe you. I can understand how your core values, whether or not they are repeated verbatim, establishes and helps people remember what your brand story is for DK Levy. That when an employee is talking to a potential customer, or somebody, an existing client talking as a referral to someone else, being able to reference those core values as part of your brand story becomes a really important piece of how you get the next project. Do you see that happening with your firm, having those established values?
Yeah, I do. And I think, you know, a lot of our competition here locally or just nationally, I mean, it's everybody does such great work. The results that they're producing, the buildings that they're designing, there's firms that we look up to as far as just being able to produce beautiful buildings. And so I think just like a doctor is going to want to, you know, wants people to be healthy. We want to, with the budgets and the opportunities we have, we want to create beautiful structures. That's just like, and for the public to experience, I think for most architects, that's going to be where you fall. So as we try and differentiate ourselves from other firms, it really comes down to those core values and the backbone of who we are. And hand in hand with that is the experience that you get with the services we provide. So I think that's comes down to the basic, let your yes be yes. I mean, these are simple biblical principles that we have adopted with integrity. You know, it's like, yes, we can hit that deadline or no, or then we have an opportunity if we've missed a deadline to explain and talk to our clients and try and make it right, you know? And so a lot of times it looks like saying things that maybe the client doesn't want to hear day one, but we're trying to keep things aligned with both our core values and the things that keep us running. So yes, I mean, we see both with referrals and with how we would market ourselves as our core value would be our lead.
What does the future of DK Levy look like in terms of growth? What do you want to look like in the next 3 to 5 years?
I think for us, like right now, we're really at a good size. I mean, maybe we could grow a little bit, but for the core values that we hold to, if we were to grow to 50 to 100 people, it's going to be difficult, again, because so much of those core values have to be happening internally before we can say, this is the experience you're going to have. You know, it's not like, oh, this is the experience you're going to have with this project manager, but you may not have it with the other. We spend a lot of time and money and resources and retreats, and we invest in developing these core values. You know, we hire based on people that show these, because a lot of these new values can't be taught, but then we build and want to see them increasing in our team. And so for us, the size of our firm is appropriate to maximize our core values. And then if we do a bigger project where we have to partner with another firm, you know, we look to do that. And we've got a couple of projects right now where we've had to do that.
So as we wrap up, Daniel, what would you say is one thing that a small firm architect can do today to build a better business for tomorrow?
I'd say write down your core values. And again, a lot of the core values you're probably doing already intuitively, but write them down so that your team can be aware of them, talk about them quarterly, hire, fire, do check-ins with your team on these core values, and stand by them, and then market them.
His name is Daniel Levy. You can learn more about Daniel and the firm at dklevy.com. Daniel, thank you. Thanks for coming by and sharing your story, sharing your thoughts about your core values. Hopefully we inspired some architects and listeners out there to establish their own core values so it can benefit their team and their customers and clients. So appreciate you for coming by here and sharing your story at Entree Architect Podcast.
Thanks for having me, Mark. Great being here.
If you liked this episode of Entree Architect Podcast, please share a link with a friend. That is the best way to help us grow. And that's how we have grown to serve thousands of architects just like you. Share a rating, write a review, but most important, share a link to this episode that you just listened to. Go send it off to a friend. I'd really appreciate it. Thank you to all our sponsors for this episode. Links to the sponsors and all the resources that we discussed today in today's episode, they're all found at entrearchitect.com/podcast. Entree Architect is a member of the Gable Media Podcast Network, the next evolution of interactive media and resources for the AEC community and beyond. You can now earn continuing education credits for listening to this podcast. Entree Architect Podcast select episodes are available for continuing education credit. Go learn more at gablemedia.com/members. And if you are a small firm architect, listen up, architects. Join us today at Entree Architect Network, the worldwide organization for small firm entrepreneur architects. That's you, with monthly business training, business resources, special session webinars, mastermind groups, and a thriving community of small firm architects. Your peers are there. Hundreds of them are there already. We will provide you with the support and the encouragement that you need to succeed. Hey, and this is super exciting. This is new, coming in 2024. Entree Architect Coaches. Yes, finally, after all these years, business coaching for small firm architects. It's coming to Entree Architect Network in early 2024. Join us. Try Entree Architect Network for free for 30 days. It's free for 30 days. Visit network.entrearchitect.com to learn more. That's network.entrearchitect.com to learn more. Try it. Come join us. Try it for 30 days. Thank you for listening to this episode of Entree Architect Podcast. My name is Mark R. LePage. Love, learn, and share what you know.
I've mentioned it to my family, but in terms of telling people like, oh yeah, we're doing this, I'm looking for projects. You got anything? Yeah. I'm not there yet because it scares the shit out of me.
Dreaming of launching your own architecture firm? Well, buckle up for a wild ride with Emerging, the podcast that shares what it's really like to start an architecture firm.
Where do we begin? We don't even know what type of business to formalize as. Is it an LLC? Is it an LLP? Like, how are taxes? I mean, the list is astronomical.
Season one featured founders Jeffrey, Lexi, and Chris, owners of Level Studio Architecture, are your fearless guides on this unfiltered journey from napkin sketches to a thriving studio.
One evening, stumbled into one last dive, we sat at the bar and pondered our postgraduate futures. Amidst the conversation, a napkin became the canvas for our aspirations, sketching plans and milestones, sealing our heartfelt commitment and shared dreams.
In drawing down dreams on a napkin collectively, that then, you know, in your head, you've rooted like, oh, I'm connected to these people, like long term.
The process of starting an architecture practice brims with excitement and challenges, demanding meticulous planning, flawless execution, and unyielding resilience.
I kind of hate the term because it's so overly used, but I think everybody knows imposter syndrome. And I think it's so real to this day. I don't know if it's with everybody, but with me, I'm always questioning like, us, can we do this? Are we ready to do this? Are we prepared? Can we do it?
Did we just decide a name?
We did it, guys.
Oh my
God. That came out of nowhere.
Woo!
It came out of nowhere. I liked it. I saw it.
Ready to turn your aspirations into reality? Follow the link in the show notes to subscribe to Emerging and chart your own path to architectural success.
Calling all small firm architects. It's time to tap into your full potential with Entree Architects Context and Clarity, where inspiration meets innovation. Hey, it's Mark R. LePage, founder of Entree Architect, and I'm inviting you to join my two favorite co-hosts, Jeff Eccles and Katie Kangas, as they bring together authors, experts, and thought leaders for electric conversations with entrepreneur architects around the globe. It's not just a podcast, it's a community where dreams meet action.
There's a simple equation there. And what for me, what that did, just doing that basic calculation, was it allowed me to compare what I had actually saved in my retirement accounts to what I thought a possible projected annual spend might be.
Artists are temperamental, so beautiful design is going to be a priority. When the job is done, we're going to actually need to live in the house, not live with the person who designed it. So for me, the artistic skill, the architectural skill is most important. And so I would say like that would be 60% of it, if not more.
Gain insights to build a successful practice. Subscribe, engage, and let's redefine your future together. Join the Context and Clarity community, where every conversation adds to your blueprint for success.